Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Seriously, if you want to relieve stress, go to the Word of God.
Oh my goodness. It's just so weird, isn't it? Do people say stuff like that?
I apologize for it.
Are you kidding me?
Let's all do baptism, and I have a little pool here, and we'll all feel nice and relaxed. That's baptism. No, baptism is a sacred Christian rite. All the various yogas are sacred Hindu rites.
Wake up, America!
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
How now shall we engage the culture? This is Wretched Radio, the big dilemma confronting evangelicals. Well, at least today, for a few hours till the next kooky story breaks, is, of course, the Hallmark Channel. Who doesn't love a good Hallmark Channel movie? That was a trick question. There are none. But that point aside, this is not a movie critic review program. This is intended to take a look at the cultural skirmish that is going on regarding Hallmark movies, specifically commercials of two women who are kissing in a Hallmark commercial ad. It's not for Hallmark. It was somebody who placed the ad on the Hallmark Channel. How do we respond to this cultural kerfuffle? How do we determine how we evangelicals are supposed to treat a TV network? How's about the cable system that carries them? How's about the TV that actually allows that type of program to be on your pixel machine? How do we deal with a fallen world? If you take a look historically at evangelical cultural engagement, this is a simplified history of our response to a world that appears to be crumbling right in front of our very eyes, doesn't it? And we have tried to be the moral majority and to get the outside of the cup as clean as possible. There was some concern about the internal dead man's bones, but it was mostly from an evangelical perspective, getting the outside of the cup cleaned up, getting people to stop sinning in particular categories, not all of them. Some were of more concern than others, but to get people to behave morally. And historically, you could say that there was some success in that regard, if that was the right approach. There was some victories. Well, the culture continues to crumble from underneath our feet. And now we see a perfect demonstration of who's got the most might right now in our culture when it comes to moral issues. Don't know if you've been tracking. Actually, I don't know how you could have missed it, but the Hallmark Channel receiving some pressure from a lot of Christians. Hey, we don't like commercials with two women kissing at the altar. Hallmark responded and said, okay, we'll pull the ad. Hollywood and the company that got canned from Hallmark, they made quite a squawk about it. Hallmark decided, oops, our bad. We'll put the commercials back on. We made a mistake. We didn't mean to hurt anybody. In other words, Christian, as of this moment, we lost. We were not able to flex more muscle than the progressives to get this commercial off the air. And I think we would do well at this time to ask, so how should we be responding to these things? And the stories are everywhere. It's not just Hallmark. It's just going on, especially in the sexual arena, all around us. It's happening. And it's almost like one of those movies where the hero is standing on the edge, or there's a fissure in the ground and the earth is rumbling, and it's like, well, there's a little crack, and he's going down. That's where we seem to be with the culture right now. It's like, oh, here it goes. How do we respond? Do we really threaten Hallmark now? Do we really let them know how we feel? Does that win a culture war? I just wonder if we need to reassess what it is that we're doing with a culture that doesn't really care about Merry Christmas. They don't care about sexual morality. You're going to see it more and more. They're sneaking in little glimpses of this. I see it. You have to watch TV for a short amount of time, and you're going to see, like, are those two guys like a couple? Is that, well, it's too fast. Now they're off to somebody else, and it just kind of really, it's just going to increase. How do we respond? Now, want to make sure that we do not respond the same way Hallmark responded. Let me see if I can demonstrate the ditch that you and I could fall into in regard to responding to the sexual collapse that we are seeing in our culture. Hallmark felt pressure from a group, so they relented. They felt more pressure from another group, so they relented to the relenting. Because they were driven by the strength of cultural voices. The volume of one was louder than the volume of the other, and so they gave in because it was what was best for their mission, which is to get eyeballs. That's the lesson of Hallmark. I fear inside of evangelical Christianity, there are two camps that maybe need to reconsider their response to the culture. Here's a camp. And this is a growing camp. And this is a relatively new camp inside of evangelical Christianity. And I fear it's very similar to Hallmark's response. Because our culture tells us that we Christians have been really nasty, horrible, big, terrible people regarding the gay issue. And whether that's been accurate or not, if that is an exaggeration, irrelevant. That's the pressure that we're feeling. So change your message. And the message, I think, is getting changed wrongly. Let me see if I can demonstrate this by quizzing you. Listen very, very carefully to how I am going to make three claims. And you tell me if they sound the same. These are three responses to the pressure that we are feeling from the world to be nicer regarding sexual issues. All right, here's response number one, and I see a lot of evangelicals responding this way. Hey, homosexual, look, you're a sinner just like I am. Yours is gay, mine is straight, but hey, we've just all got sin issues. Is that statement wrong? And the answer is no, it's not wrong. But ask yourself, what does that message send? What does that say to the individual who is struggling with sexual sins? Does it not downplay what the Bible describes as being a particular abomination to God? Does this sin just like that sin? And as best I can tell in the Bible does put categories on sins and say some are worse than others. And the sin of homosexuality is clearly defined as a particular abomination to the Lord. And I fear this one group, in an effort to kind of, hey, we're not mean, we kind of water it down and change our message, not unlike Hallmark. Here's another statement that some evangelicals are making. Hey, look, I know you're gay, but there's a bigger sin. There's just a much bigger sin, and that's the sin of unbelief. And furthermore, to all of you evangelicals who are focusing so much on the sin of homosexuality, they've got a much bigger problem than homosexuality. Is that statement true? And the answer is yes, it is. It is true. They do have a bigger problem, and that is the sin of unbelief. That is indeed true. But when we frame it that way, does it not minimize that particular sin? And now the reason that I'm going through this little semantic quiz, because we want to be biblical in our response. We don't want to respond pragmatically. We don't want to respond with what works, either for culture, for church growth, or because that's the way it worked for me. We want to be biblical. Here's a third statement. See if you can feel a difference in this. The Bible describes homosexuality as a particular abomination to the Lord. Even nature gets that you are supposed to be behaving in a certain way simply by virtue of the way that you're made, for the sake of procreation, for body parts, and because God created male and female. And so when we act outside of those roles, it is a particular abomination to the Lord because it is an absolute rebellion against his character, nature, and design. Now, if you think that sin is horrible, and it is, guess what? There's an even worse sin If you fail to repent and put your trust in the Lord Jesus Christ, that is an even greater sin. So you're taking an already bad sin along with all of your other wicked sins, and you're committing a greater abomination, and you're rejecting the message of forgiveness of Jesus Christ. Did that feel a little different? That was an effort to try to make sure that we don't water down any particular sin, but let them know, you better not reject this message of good news in Jesus Christ. I think this is important for us to study and figure out. We look at Hallmark and we go, they sold out. They gave in to the pressure. I don't want to commit that same calamity. And I fear inside of evangelical Christianity that we are perhaps on a road to do that very thing because we are feeling the pressure of culture. Now, there's another group of evangelicals who are saying, let's just double down on this thing and let's just keep going with the old strategy. I say we cast off any strategy historically, pragmatic or otherwise, and go to a biblical strategy, which is the only thing that will guide us to make sure we don't water down any particular sin, make it clear that the sin of unbelief is by far the worst sin they could possibly commit, so that we respond biblically. This is Wretched Radio. Let's go to Eastern Europe for yet another great story coming out of the Tomorrow Clubs.
Andrea was left by her mother when she was 3 months old. The Tomorrow Club director decided to pray for this girl and she repented. She used to be a sad looking kid. Now seems like that smile never comes off her face.
So many kids are abandoned by parents who need to go to other countries to make a living. They donate their organs. They leave the kids. They are lost physically and spiritually, and the Tomorrow Clubs finds them. They teach them the gospel. They help them to memorize Bible verses. They even will help them with their family lives. It's a magnificent ministry, story after story coming out of Eastern Europe. $30 a month, 30 disciples. Tomorrow Clubs is the ministry. Would you please consider supporting a club of your own? TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
There are certain things people love getting for Christmas, you know, like new toys, new socks, the newest iPhone. There are things Wretched would love for Christmas too, gospel partners. As this year is coming to a close, would you consider becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner? You see, thanks to our gospel partners, you can find full episodes of Wretched Radio and TV at the home of all things Wretched, wretched.org, among many other resources. For free. Without our gospel partners, there simply is no Wretched. So if you enjoy watching or listening to Wretched and want to continue to do so, would you please consider becoming a Wretched gospel partner? Every dollar you give will be faithfully stewarded. In fact, right now, 83% of every dollar goes directly towards ministry work. Get the details on becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner at wretched.org/donate. Visit wretched.org/donate.
Well, Geneva was married, but in her 20s, she had a one-year-old daughter at home that would interfere with her plans to go back to school, and so she was hoping she wasn't pregnant, but she was. I asked her how she felt about her pregnancy. She said, I don't want it, and my husband doesn't want it. She agreed to do an ultrasound, and she didn't want to take any pictures of the ultrasound, but she did look at it for a long time. And so we put it in the file, and then we started walking out of the clinic with her, and she turns to the nurse, and she says, do you have any referrals for medical providers? And I said, yeah, we've got a good doctor. You can go see him. Well, she went to him, and she chose life.
Ultrasounds save lives. Would you please consider supporting preborn.org, providing free ultrasounds, and presenting the gospel to moms and dads, $28 per ultrasound. How many could you support each month? Please support Preborn at preborn.org/wretched.
Christians are called to make disciples, but where do we start? Hearts for the Lost assists local pastors and church congregations by helping them equip the saints with biblical principles for personal evangelism. They'll fly out to your church to put on an evangelism seminar and then go out into the streets with you to put it into practice. And it's all free. To learn more or to schedule a conference, go to heartsforthelost.com. Heartsforthelost.com.
Books of the Bible. 2 Corinthians is Paul's second letter to the Corinthian church, written about 1 year later. Since Paul had last written, some false apostles had snuck in and began to question Paul's authority. There are many who claim authority in the church, but those called by Christ will bear the marks of Christ, which are humility and reliance upon Christ. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
All right, gentlemen, where do you disagree? Now, this is Wretched Radio. Gentlemen, you just heard my diatribe that we need to be better responders than the Hallmark Channel when it comes to our message. Whether or not we offend people is not a consideration. We don't want to be offensive, but if our message offends, well, it's an offensive message. And I fear there may be growing circles inside of evangelical Christianity that, in response to a culture and churches that are shouting at us, be nicer, be nicer, be nicer, regarding sexual issues, that maybe we're not responding biblically. After all, the cross is still about forgiveness of sins, not just a better lifestyle. So, gentlemen, I suggested, got to be careful, find the right balance. We in the past, historically, let's just say, fine, we've done a bad job of talking about this issue, but we don't want to whiplash into another ditch and water it down, make it sound just like every other single sin that there is, or maybe not even bring it up at all, and make the only sin that is something that is damnable, the sin of unbelief, as the paramount sin at the expense of all the other sins that people commit. So that was my little diatribe regarding responding better than Hallmark. Do I have it wrong anywhere, in your opinion?
No. I mean, really, not that I come up with. The bottom line is we had to quit cleaning the outside of the cup and worry more about the inside.
I agree with that, but I totally agree with that, Tony. This is getting quite painful at this point for us to be agreeing like this, but nevertheless. It's our message that we want to make sure that we don't want our only message to be homosexuality is horrible, and that becomes the image and the face of the church. That's not right. But at the same time, I see that there's a push to just kind of minimize that sin in a response to perhaps a wrong overemphasis in the past to a no emphasis in the present and future. And I think that that's unbiblical, too. And we need to make sure that we remain biblical in our proclamations. There's a big, big push right now. Just be nice to people who are gay. Well, of course we should be nice to people who are gay. But that doesn't save anybody who is locked in that sin. They need to understand that sin and every other sin is an abomination to God. And they need forgiveness of sins. That's what they need. And of course we should be nice to everybody. Of course we should entertain people. Of course we can have people over for meals who are gay. That is all well and good. But if we pretend that this sin just isn't that big of a deal, or we don't bring it up, or we don't identify it for what it is, that might be the very thing that God uses to convict somebody. And we don't want to whiplash based on societal pressure. We've got to figure out a way how to do this biblically. So how do we do that biblically? What is the balance here? Well, I might suggest to you that we take a look at the scan and the scope of the New Testament. And how does it talk about this particular sin, same-sex attraction, or any of these sexual issues, transgenderism? I mean, I got to tell you. I got a stack of these stories where it's just bonkers. I mean, it's absolutely bonkers what's going on out there. For instance, you've got the man who thinks he's a woman who sues the place where they do waxing and stuff because he wanted to get waxed as like a bikini, a Brazilian wax as a man. And they said, sorry, we don't do that. So he sued him, and apparently he's won. What? Now, this fellow who identifies now as a woman with male parts is suing a gynecologist who doesn't know what to do with him because, well, he's a gynecologist. He's a gynecologist,
yeah.
Okay. He won the Brazilian wax lawsuit. Okay? Okay. We're talking about a world that is clearly just springs have gone boing right out of their global head. How do we respond to this? How do we deal with it? Well, I guess we could get angry about this. We could yell at them and tell them to knock it off. Well, okay, but we're Christians, so how do I respond to it? If I look at the scope of the New Testament, I probably should talk about it about as much as the New Testament does, give or take. It's there. It's clearly identified as an abomination. We should talk about it as the need arises. I don't think that it should be the hallmark sin that we campaign against, because people are trapped in all kinds of sins. They are lost in all kinds. It's not just sexual. That is a biggie. But that's not the only one. So how does the New Testament present this? Well, let's maybe follow that pattern and that balance. Does the New Testament couch it and say, well, it's really, look, it's just like every other sin. So, hey, don't feel singled out. Doesn't do that. So it deals with it correct. Does the Bible, the New Testament anywhere say, be particularly hospitable to these people? No. Does the Bible say, don't be hospitable to those people? No, doesn't say that either. Do we need to start following a particular strategy these days because maybe one person makes it sound really good or it was particularly powerful in one instance? No, I just want to respond biblically to this. And I want to find my correct balance in this. I agree. I think we've biffed this issue enough historically. This thing hit like a tidal wave. And there was just so much focus on the issue, the concern about politics, social structures, the institution of marriage. All of those things caused us to just reel and just be really angry sounding about this. Do I want to be angry sounding about the sin of homosexuality? No more than the sin of lying, which is also an abomination. Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord. That one kind of surprises us, doesn't it? But I'm not sure stealing is on the list of abominations. It's a sin. It's a damnable sin. But it's not put into the category that homosexuality is. So I want to talk about it honestly. I want to be straightforward with it. And I still want to be demonstrating love to the sinner. I also want to make sure this is important, too, that we don't commit the same evangelistic error that we can with women who have had an abortion, where we make their conversion about that sin. That, hey, that sin that you committed, the ending of a life of a child, you need to be forgiven. And that can crush them, and rightly so. It can cause them to grieve over that sin. But an individual should be grieved over every sin. Oh, sure, maybe some more in particular than others. Why? Because they're especially egregious. But an individual who comes to the Lord shouldn't just come to be forgiven of a sin. They should come to be forgiven for all sins, broken and contrite in spirit. That they should be poor, beggar poor. They can do nothing to improve their status. That's the individual who will inherit the kingdom of God. That is a ditch we want to avoid with the sin of homosexuality. Yeah, that is a biggie. Well, there are more to it than that. Yes, abortion is a biggie. There are more to it than that. All of that to say, as we respond to a culture and our world, it isn't changing. It has changed. It has changed. Now, there are some structures that are still standing, but it's ACLU tweets for International Men's Day. Quote, transgenders who get pregnant and give birth are men. Really? That's just bonkers is what that is. And I've got a stack of these different stories here. Lesbian who married a woman sues after being expelled from Fuller Theological Seminary. That's seeking damages of $500,000. She enrolled in the seminary as a woman who was married to a man, got divorced, then married a woman, and Fuller said, sorry, you can't go to school here anymore. So what does she do? She sues them because it doesn't fit her lifestyle, seeking $500,000 for humiliation, emotional distress, and other damages. Students are required to agree to the school's moral and behavioral standards upon enrollment. Doesn't matter. We're throwing those things out. Why? Because our culture, it's just, it has changed. It's not changing. It has changed. Are we going to commit the errors of our past and whiplash? I don't think we should. I think this forces us, this demands of us that we get our noses back in the Bible to figure out how to deal with this sin in this culture at this time. And I think it is to be a balanced approach, to not water it down, not make it our banner sin issue, not to try to clean the outside of people's cups, but to be kind and loving, as hospitable as you choose to be as an individual with your home, to be loving, to be a good neighbor, but to speak the truth lovingly. And if we try to water it down so that the world doesn't hate us or our neighbors aren't annoyed with us, then we will have made a massive mistake and we will not have done the world any favors. Christian, I think it's time for us to adjust our understanding of the world that we are living in and what the key issue actually is and how a dark world is going to respond to the light. Culture war is over. Spiritual warfare on. This is Wretched Radio.
SOS Ministries wants to see a movement take place within God's church in Uganda. They want to see God-fearing, Christ-proclaiming churches rise up across the country and impact the whole of the Ugandan society. To reach out nationwide, they have the Ministry of Church Strengthening and the Shepherd's Training Center to thoroughly equip indigenous pastors. But without the consistent support of God's people, none of this is possible. If you can help support SOS Ministries, go to sosministries.com. sosministries.com.
Attributes of God. Can God make a rock so big he cannot lift it? God is all-powerful. He created the universe and everything in it, and nothing can thwart his will. So the question of the rock is nonsensical. It does not expose a problem with God, but with the thinking of the one asking the question, and they will one day have to answer to the omnipotent God. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Well, like a blind knife that finds a squirrel in the clock, three sheds a day. This is Wretched Radio. I stumbled across a website. Actually, it was sent into idea@wretched.org. KirkDurston.com. He is a doctor of philosophy. He is a Christian by profession, and he is a student of sociology. Can we learn from an unbelieving sociologist? Sort of. We learn from the Bible. And when a sociologist stumbles onto something that is in alignment with Scripture, we give it a hearty affirmation. The pagan world can observe just fine, thank you very much. But it is the Bible that explains why things are the way that they are and how we are to respond to them. Headline: Why Sexual Morality May Be Far More Important Than You Ever Thought. This is fascinating, and there's a biblical explanation for this. An unbelieving fellow, an anthropologist named J.D. Unwin, he wrote thousands of pages having studied cultures over decades, and his work was put into a condensed volume of only 600 pages called Sex and Culture, Studying What the World Looks Like When Sexual Mores Present Themselves in Different Forms. And so it is for decades. He studied cultures, a lot of them. He was a rationalist. He believed that science is the ultimate tour of inquiry, which is why he couldn't explain why he saw consistent patterns in culture regarding sexuality. But there's no question about it that he did see patterns. And so he puts a summary together. The people have put together a summary of his work where he took a look at 86 societies and civilizations to see if there's a relationship between sexual freedom and the flourishing of cultures. Spoiler alert, yes, there is. the culture that has higher view of sex and marriage and a lower view of sexual freedom and polyamory of whatever form, the former culture flourishes. The latter culture does not. This has been brought way down, thankfully, by Kirk Durston. So here are the cultural categories that were given by this sociologist who died in 1930-something. He described four great patterns of human culture. This is degrees of flourishing: architecture, art, engineering, literature, agriculture, everything. So the things that we see in our society, the things that we appreciate and value, the structures that exist, how do we categorize those? So his primary criterion for classification was how they related to the natural world. In other words, how does this stuff operate? We see you drop something and gravity takes it to the ground. Explain that. And so he came up with four categories. One was zoistic. That this is a culture, day-to-day life, wants, needs, no interest in understanding nature. So we don't even ask why things are the way they are in this culture. Second type of culture was a monistic culture. Superstitious beliefs to explain the natural world, to help us cope with dying, living, sickness, etc. The third category was deistic. We attribute the powers of nature to a god or gods. Doesn't have to be Christian, just has to be belief in a higher power. And finally, his categories, rationalistic, and this is going to be very helpful in understanding cultures like China and Japan. They use rational thinking to understand nature, make day-to-day decisions. So science, that is how they figure out everything. No interest, superstition, God, science. Those are the categories for understanding the world. Now, Unwin gave degrees of sexual restraint, divided into a couple of categories, prenuptial and postnuptial. Complete sexual freedom, no prenuptial restraints at all. So in these, there's four different views: no God, superstition, God, science. They would take a look at sexual freedom and say there's no prenuptial restraints at all. Another group would say irregular or occasional restraint. Cultural regulations require an occasional period of abstinence. Then there would be strict chastity, the type of culture that said, you remain a virgin until married. Follow along with this. This has a smashing biblical exclamation point. As he studied these 86 societies to see how they flourished, how they did as a culture, with all of the cultural values and the external symbols of it, quality of living, how we treat one another, architecture, etc., here's another category. This is how they looked at postnuptial issues. Modified monogamy, one spouse at a time, but you can end it as fast as you want to. Modified polygamy, you can have more than one wife, but a wife is free to leave her husband. Number three, absolute monogamy, only one spouse permitted for a life or until death in some cultures. And then there's absolute polygamy. Men can have more than one wife, but wives must confine their sexual activities to their husband for the whole of their lives. All right, now, those are the categories of big markers in a society. Now, when we put all of these together, what combinations resulted in the greatest human flourishing? You're probably guessing already, aren't you? But these are the significant findings from this sociologist. Number one, effect of sexual constraints. When there's increased sexual constraints, either pre- or post-nuptial, remember that category? Always led to increased flourishing of a culture. Always.
Wait, does that mean always? Or are you...
Means
always.
Means the Bible is right.
So yes, it does.
Conversely, increased sexual freedom always led to the collapse of a culture. Note this well, three generations later. Because I know you're going to start doing the math immediately. All right, when did it start in America and how long is a generation? That's a great question. Now, here's what's fascinating about this. This sociologist who dedicated decades to studying 86 cultures published his findings in 1936. He couldn't explain it. I can observe it. It's true. It's undeniable. With this combination in a culture, this will be the result within three generations. Count on it. Now, he put sexual mores as the leading component here. If the culture has these types of attitudes about sex, this is what the culture is going to look like. I would actually disagree with that. I would say where the beliefs of a culture are, that's going to determine their sexual mores and values, and that will result in what type of culture we live in. Now, he couldn't get that because all he can do is observe. He can't explain. He can't get everything right because he's not going by the standard that is always right, the Bible. More findings from sociologist Unwin. Surprisingly, the data revealed that the single most important correlation with the flourishing of a culture was whether prenuptial chastity was required or not. It had a very significant effect either way. Why? Because God said this is the way to do it. And even a culture like China that is not Christian predominantly, when they do it God's way, they're going to have flourishing, at least externally, architecture, etc. I know the persecution. I get that. I know the bad communist system. But I'm just talking about the markers that we see in an orderly society: food, water, commerce, art, etc. Now, is it as good as it is in the West? Not even close. Why? Because it's not guided by Christian flourishing principles. The implication, however, because our belief system is changing in America, not our sexual values, our belief system is changing, reflected in our sexual values. This sociologist says within three generations, you will see a collapse in culture. Number three finding. The highest flourishing of culture, the most powerful combination, was prenuptial chastity coupled with absolute monogamy. Whoever retains that combination for at least three generations exceeded all other cultures in every area. Literature, art, science, furniture, architecture, engineering, agriculture, you name it. Only three out of the 86 cultures studied even attained this level. Absolute, nope, you're going to be chaste and you're going to be faithful in marriage. You do that, that's a winner for culture. Why? Because when a culture, whether it gives credit to God or not, does it God's way, it's going to work. It has to work because that's the way things are made. When strict prenuptial chastity was no longer the norm, absolute monogamy, deism, and rational thinking also disappeared within three generations. Uh-oh. If total sexual freedom was embraced by a culture, that culture collapsed within three generations to the lowest state of flourishing. Going back to that Zoistic, that inert society, you're at a dead level of conception. Little interest in not much more than my sexual needs and wants. Food and water would be nice. Just give me sex. I don't care about culture. I don't care about people. At this level, the culture is usually conquered or taken over by another culture with greater social energy. Why? Because the Bible says so. And now the question that's itching to be answered: how long is a generation? Next on Wretched Radio.
Thank you for joining us today. Always appreciate that you choose to spend part of your day with us here at Wretched Radio. As our year comes to a close, would you please consider becoming a gospel partner? You know, the folks who keep the lights on here and let Wretched be Wretched on the radio, the TV, the internet, with all the resources we develop. Wretched.org/donate has details on how you can support us as 2019 comes to an end. Wretched.org/donate. Wretched, believe it or not, is growing like a nobody's business. And we have the opportunity to reach more and more people with the gospel. But for that to happen, we truly need your year-end support. Wretched.org/donate. And please know, we will treat your gifts as if they are the widow's mite. Right now, 83% of every dollar given to Wretched goes directly into ministry work. Wretched.org/donate. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
What two pastors go through to bring Bibles to their parishioners in the Philippines.
Two pastors, they had to rise up 3 a.m. and walk for 2 hours. And after that, they have to ride a bangka across the river for an hour and then walk again for 3 hours just to get hold of those precious Bibles. They will return in the same way again to bring those Bibles to people whom they are ministering.
That is what they go through. What must you and I do to bring those Bibles to believers around the globe? Pick up our phones. Call Bible League International. Would you do that right now? $5 per Bible. Could you send 7 per month? Call Bible League International right now, and they will be delivered to the hands of a believer. 1-800-YES-WORD. Just giving you a chance to write that down or to call it. 1-800-YES-WORD to bring Bibles to believers through Bible League International. 1-800-YES-WORD.
Merry Christmas from your not-so-politically-correct friends here at Wretched. Did you know right now Wretched is having a Christmas sale? Well, now you do. Right now, Wretched is having a Christmas sale. That means when you visit the Wretched store, you will see that everything is 50% off when you use promo code CHRISTMAS. 50% off everything. Books, DVDs, CDs, 50% off when you use the promo code CHRISTMAS. So visit the Wretched store at wretched.org/sale. Oh, by the way, for every order of $40 or more, you'll also receive a free copy of Herman Hu. If my math is correct, that's a $24.99 value, absolutely free. So stock up on all your Christmas goodies this year and save up to 50% and get a free copy of Herman Hu. Pretty much that easy. Visit wretched.org/sale and be sure you use the promo code CHRISTMAS to get all your 50% off savings. That's wretched.org/sale.
Important dates in Christian history. 1678. John Bunyan's The Pilgrim's Progress is published. Written while Bunyan was in prison for preaching the gospel, this allegorical tale of the Christian life becomes second in international circulation, exceeded only by the Bible. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
So, how long exactly is a generation anyway? This is Wretched Radio. A sociologist studying 86 cultures for decades came up with definitive conclusions, the connection between the quality of living, how healthy a culture is, with external markers like architecture, art, agriculture, transportation, furniture design, clothing design, music, all of the good things that cultures are typically graded by. They rise or fall based on sexual attitudes. How does a culture view issues of marriage? Now, this particular sociologist named Unwin, who died in the mid-1930s, he couldn't figure out why. Sexual freedom directly leads to a decline and the collapse of cultures. Because he was using sexuality as the marker, and it is not. The marker is belief. Sexual values flow out of belief. We cannot make the sociologist's error here and go, if a culture collapses because they have complete sexual liberty and freedom, then we got to change sexuality. We got to get their attitudes and their standards higher about sex so that they won't be frisky before marriage and then they'll stay married faithfully. That's what we've got to do. The Christian realizes that sexual values flow out of belief first. And if people believe in nothing, that man is the highest form of being in the universe, in other words, we are God functionally, we're going to live for ourselves and we're going to make decisions that please us the most. Therefore, we're not going to follow Mr. Unwin and his conclusions. We are going to see the need for changing people's faith. Then their sexual values change, then their sexual behavior changes, and then the culture changes. Let's not put the cart before the horse. He concluded, when a culture behaves chastely, whatever the motivation is, we know that it's in alignment with God's values and thinking, it flourishes, period, prenuptially and postnuptially. Behave in a biblical way, and a culture will do great. You don't? It won't. Simple. And he said that the culture that fails to live in that way, the culture that has complete sexual freedom as its driving force, 3 generations, It's a goner. It becomes an inert society. It becomes dead culturally, dead human flourishing. Now, we know there's spiritual death, which is the bigger and the biggest issue. But we're looking at our own culture and we're going, yikes, we seem to be pressing toward that sexual freedom business. In fact, you could argue sexual freedom, was that not the bumper sticker of the 1960s, certainly the 70s? And that we now are living in a world that is pushing for complete sexual freedom. Right now. We're in it. We're at the beginning of this, at the very least. And he says, based on a sociological study of 86 countries, this will always happen within three generations, collapse. So you've been wondering, when is it going to collapse on us? Answer, according to this sociologist, three generations. It happens every time. How long is a generation? According to this sociologist, he said 33 years. That's how he did the math on this. 33 years. That would mean 3 times 3. Where's my phone?
99.
Let's call it a century for the sake of easy math. When did complete sexual freedom begin in this country? Well, I think the push began certainly in the 60s. But aren't we seeing it now? We didn't see the same levels of degradation in the 60s that we're seeing today. This is just polygamy, same-sex sex. This is with children. This is bestiality. You got that, and that's what is being pushed right now. You got 99 years, and you're a goner. Prior to the sexual revolution, which began in the late 1960s, by the way, just to do a shout-out on this, to give the fellow credit who did the summarizing, KirkDurston.com. Nice work, sir. Prior to the sexual revolution, which began in the late 60s, prenuptial chastity was still held strong by Western culture, starting in the 70s. A premarital sexual freedom became increasingly acceptable. By the early 2000s, the majority of teens sexually active. Remaining a virgin until marriage? Ridiculed. At the same time, our culture moved from a social norm of absolute monogamy to modified monogamy. Do you remember that category? So we downgraded. The first generation of a society setting aside its sexual restraints can still enjoy its newfound sexual freedom before any significant decline in culture. You've been wondering, well, when is culture going to slip? Well, this sociologist, he observed this is the way. No. You'll keep doing well because it's the vestiges of. It's not like you turn a page and society falls apart. The page, it's turned, and then the society increasingly will fall apart as it becomes increasingly inert, because all we're concerned about is sexual pleasure. That's it. That's all we care about. I don't care how well I live. I don't care how many square feet. I don't care about quality of living. I don't care about transportation. I just want me some. And I don't, in my format, as often as I want to, delivered in any mechanism. That's all I care about. That's an inert culture. And that comes three generations after sexual freedom, prenuptially and postnuptially. The data shows this having your cake and eating it too phase lasts a maximum of one generation before the decline sets in. Here's what the sociologist wrote. Sometimes a man has been heard to declare that he wishes both to enjoy the advantages of high culture and to abolish compulsory continence. The inherent nature of the human organism, however, seems to be such that these desires are incompatible, even contradictory. So you're not going to have a high culture with low sexual values. You're not going to have it. And this isn't sociology. This is biblical. This is human flourishing. When God defines the rules and you apply them, even if you don't believe in them, your culture is going to flourish. You don't, you won't, period. The reformer may be likened to the foolish boy who desires both to keep his cake and to consume it. Any human society is free to choose either to display great energy or to enjoy sexual freedom. The evidence is that it cannot do both for more than one generation. So if the having your cake and eating it too phase lasts into the early 2000s, we should now begin to observe the verification or falsification of this sociologist's predictions. We're there. You and I are watching it. Now, we're going to be deceived if we respond the way that evangelicals so often have. Hey, stop behaving sexually. Change your beliefs about sexual stuff. Mm-mm-mm. Change your beliefs about God. That's the Christian response to this. Sociologist Unwin found that when strict prenuptial chastity was abandoned, absolute monogamy, deism, and rational thinking disappeared within three generations. How are we doing as we enter the second generation since our own sexual revolution at the end of the 20th century? Number one, as predicted by the sociologist, absolute monogamy has already been replaced with modified monogamy. Common law stuff. It's not till death do us part. It's as long as it makes me happy. Uh-oh. Number two, deism is rapidly declining, exactly as predicted. Prior to the 60s, we could say more of a belief in God, certainly, especially with what generation are we seeing the collapse of belief in God? With the millennial generation and Gen Z and X, of course, they're raised in this sexual liberty culture. Their belief in God goes down. Now, you and I know they've got the cart before the horse here. There's also been a huge increase in the percentage of the population that classifies itself as non-religious. So this is headed toward the Zoistic level of the category. Non-religious, low view of sex, low view of marriage. Now, I know and you know because the Bible tells us the problem is beliefs. You change beliefs, everything else gets fixed. But he puts them in the wrong order. Nevertheless, the observation is clear. We're not seeing sex change belief. We're seeing belief changing sexual values. Number three, the swiftness with which rational thinking declined after the 70s is astounding. Two words, postmodernism. We're thinking like complete noodles. The ACLU stating that a man who believes he's a woman can deliver a baby or some, what was that ridiculous story? It's rational thinking. And what's really just so astounding about it is they think that their irrational thinking is actually rational. Ah-ha-ha, see how clever we are and how dumb you are and out of step with the times and on the wrong side of history? That comes from a lack of belief in God, not just because of sexual liberty. These are all fruits of a lack of belief in God. Summary of our culture. Unwin's main predictions, the abandonment of rationalism, deism, monogamy, are all well underway, which makes the ultimate prediction appear to be credible, the collapse of Western civilization in the third generation. I disagree with the sociologist. It's been a collapse of faith, which has led to these other collapses. Will we be the exception? Absolutely not. He describes the attitude as a pardonable egocentricity, and a quaint and comfortable doctrine that flies in the face of data which indicate that the pattern of decline happens with monotonous regularity. Certainly explains what we see, doesn't it? And now the question is, how do we respond? Do we try to encourage the culture for the sake of art and architecture and music and human flourishing to change its sexual values? Nope. We encourage them to believe on the Lord Jesus Christ and you will be saved. The rest will take care of itself. Let's not follow the message of the sociologist, but the message of our captain. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.